We're going to get right to it. Mix in some Long Island, some Jersey Shore, some North Jersey, Salt Lake City, Eugene. Born on the island, covered Rutgers and Monmouth for the Asbury Park Press. Now he covers Utah sports for the Salt Lake Trib. On Twitter, use the handle at Joshua_Newman. From Long Island, the Jersey Shore. I'm from North Jersey. We're going to try Josh one more time. Josh, you with me?
Steve, how are you?
All right. I'm doing well. Let's start with the obvious. Living in New York, as far as being a sports fan, you know, we have the traditionalists who'll go Yankees, Giants, Knicks, Rangers. Then out your way, you could get the Jets, Mets, Nets, and Islander lean. So I'm curious, growing up, what was it about the New York teams? Did you have a particular lean, or did you deviate, or even worse, were you a Devils fan?
No, not a Devils fan. I'm 39 years old, so I'm a child of the late 80s into the 90s. The Nets were not a thing at all if you were growing up on Long Island. Basketball was my first love. It still is my first love. And I fell in love with the Knicks in the late 80s and into the 90s with Ewing and Starks and Oakley and the whole thing. Still am a diehard Jets fan. Again, the Knicks are my first love, but I think as an adult, the Jets are still really the only team that I grew up for that I still am very passionate about, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I'm from the generation, I grew up at the Garden with Clyde and Willis and Dollar Bill. We had season's tickets from when the Garden opened when I was six through the championship year. So that's something we have in common, and it's been a long time.
Oh, boy. It's been a long time.
So, as I'm somebody who moved to Eugene sight unseen from then Philadelphia 31 years ago just for the chance to get into radio, I'm curious, you're living and working in Springsteen country, for those who always say, what exit, 102 on the parkway. What led you to decide, you know what, this opportunity in Salt Lake City seems like the right move?
You know, it was, you pretty much put it there. I mean, look, I was living at the Jersey Shore. I was working for the Asbury Park Press down the Jersey Shore. I covered high schools for a number of years. I covered helped out with coverage of Seton Hall and Monmouth. I got the Rutgers beat starting in 2017. And then, the opportunity at the Salt Lake Tribune, it presented itself. I actually interviewed for the BYU beat position at the Tribune, but they wound up offering me the Utah beat, and it's all worked out. I mean, I think I was at a point where I was ready for a change, both in my professional life as well as my personal life. My wife is from the Pacific Northwest, so she was happy to get, 2,000 miles back westward. So things have worked out pretty well so far.
I love it. When I think of the Jersey Shore, yeah, it's going down the shore and the beach. It's also a lot of the money I lost at Monmouth, but that's also a story for another day. Talking with Josh Newman of the Salt Lake Tribune. So I mentioned your sports journalism career was on the East Coast, but with Rutgers in the Big Ten, I'm curious as to, before you got this gig, what was your level of familiarity with the Utah program, which is tremendous and led by a guy, everybody knows is next level in Coach Whittingham?
The football program, not so much. I knew who Kyle Whittingham was. I knew that they were in the Pac-12. I knew, the time that I was coming out here, I knew that they were at a point where they were really beginning to contend in the Pac-12. I'm not going to sit here and say that I knew every nuance in and out of Utah football. But again, as a basketball freak when I was a kid, with Rick Majerus and, Keith Van Horn, and they went to the title game in 98. I mean, that was really what stuck out to me about the University of Utah. But I got hired in August 2019, but I couldn't come out here until December 2019. So I had 4 months to, you know, kind of get my life together and figure out where we were going to live and all these things. And, you know, I spent a pretty considerable amount of time in those 4 months, you know, consuming all the content I could, whether it be written or podcast or website or whatever. I really tried to dive right in and hit the ground running when I came out here. And I think that was a benefit, you know, that I had 4 months to kind of get myself together before I came out here. I think that was very, very helpful.
So the years you covered the Scarlet Knights, I went back and checked the schedule. So over just three seasons, you got to cover games at the Big House, Camp Randall, the Horseshoe, Kinnick Stadium, Memorial Stadium for Big Red, and Beaver Stadium for Penn State. So, you know, which of those venues, if not all, made you kind of take a moment and say, huh, it's nice to get paid to do this?
You know, the best Big Ten atmosphere that I'd seen is Nebraska. And there's not even a close second based on what I've seen. I mean, the week that I was in Nebraska, they had just lost to Northern Illinois, which is a terribly bad loss, and the athletic director was fired on Wednesday, the week of the game. It was a bad Nebraska team, and got there Saturday, and there were 95,000 people. Student section was full. It was just a tremendous in-game atmosphere. And just to your point, you know, covering Rutgers, you know, that took me places that I never thought I would see, right? As you said, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, you know, Penn State a number of times. And, right, you never know where life is going to take you, and now you're, you know, now I'm out here covering Utah. Never thought my career would take me, you know, to the Mountain Time Zone. You know, I've seen the LA Coliseum, seen a bunch of other stadiums this season that I just, you know, the ability to see things and do things and meet people and experience things that you just never thought you'd see. You know, it really is funny where life may take you.
Wow, there's life outside Piscataway. Who'd have thunk it? So let's actually get to some Utah football. So the quarterback to start the season was Charlie Brewer, who was a four-year starter at Baylor. And then this year they beat Weber State, lost to BYU. Then he got benched at San Diego State. Enter Cameron Risen off the pine, rallies him. They do lose in overtime, and Brewer leaves. I've seen you write about it in some other columns. Well, what has Coach Whittingham said about those who question, why didn't you start Rising earlier, and maybe questioning how close the camp competition was?
You know, hindsight's always 20/20, and, you know, that's been a popular topic of conversation as things have moved along here and as Utah has continued to be in contention for the Pac-12 South. I mean, look, that was his line throughout camp in August. He said a week in, he said that it was extremely close. 2 weeks in, he said it was extremely close. The end of week three, as you get close to the opener, he still maintained, like, this is legitimately close. And, you know, I'm only speaking for myself. I had no reason not to believe him. Like, I'll take him at his word. I believe that it's close. But then you start thinking about, okay, well, if it's legitimately close, if it's that close, well, what is the deciding factor supposed to be? Me personally, I thought that that factor should be Brewer played in, you know, 45 career games at Baylor, played in a Big 12 championship game, played in a Sugar Bowl, threw for 9,700 yards. He has the experience. Cam Rising had 6 pass attempts for his career before he blew out his shoulder last year. So, you know, hindsight's 20/20. It's easy to second guess. I think that Whittingham made the right decision to go with Brewer at the start. You know, it didn't work out. You were dealing with a pretty green offensive line. You know, Brewer struggled, you know, within the offense. So, you know, Kyle Whittingham made a change. You could argue maybe that he waited a little too long in that San Diego State game to make a change. Maybe if he goes earlier with Rising, maybe you steal that San Diego State game. But look, I mean, here we are. You know, they're 7-3 overall. You know, given what's gone on with Brewer and, you know, of course, the tragic death of Aaron Lowe has kind of hung over everything for the last 2 months. They're 7-3. They're 6-1 in the Pac-12. It's mid to late November, and they are in contention for a Pac-12 championship. I think, you know, the season has not gone according to plan. There's been bumps and peaks and valleys and the whole thing, but the bottom line is here you are at the most important time of year with a huge game coming and you're contending.
You know, I got a hit on last week, talking with Josh Newman of the Salt Lake Trib. I think I kind of ignored the game because most of us were like, well, there's a bunch of other games. It's Utah and Arizona. And you learn Tavion Thomas isn't playing. Then all of a sudden there's a blocked punt in the fourth quarter and the Cats are going for the tie. And, you know, I know you wrote about some injuries like Fabian Marks on one corner, starting center Nick Ford, his backup Paul Miley, who both had to leave the Arizona game. Have we learned anything further about their status? Because that's sounds like that could be a substantial factor.
Yeah, so Ford is their general starting center, as you said, but there's been some injuries on the line. Ford is very versatile. He's played every position on the line throughout his career. So he's been playing left guard. Turns out he wasn't hurt. He's just, you know, he had some cramps late in that Arizona game. He's had a sinus infection. He's been taking meds. He was dehydrated. Fine. Nick Ford will play. Fabian Marks, that's a bit up in the air. He left the game. He was in a boot with crutches. Paul Miley, who has been playing center with Ford kicked outside to left guard. Miley was also on crutches. So, Marks and Miley are the big question marks. the big question marks going into Saturday. If you want to try to decide which is more dire, the secondary is already pretty thin. And losing Marks, who has played pretty well, as a second-year freshman who was already starting because of another injury in front of him, if Fabian Marks can't go, that's not going to make it any easier for the Utah defense, which has struggled at times this season, to be fair.
You know, I thought what you posted this morning in your piece, it kind of said aloud what some people were thinking. You know, Utah's not going to the playoff, but the South is close to theirs. They win this or Colorado, they're both at home, or Arizona State loses and it's in. And I think you had the audacity to throw the thought out in your Utes mailbag that this is a way bigger game for Oregon than Utah. Curious, Josh, how'd that go over with the fans you heard from?
Every fan base has its kind of section of like crazy, right? The Utah fan base is no different. There's people that are going to want to believe what they're going to believe and who are irrational. I thought that point was valid. I mean, I don't think that's unfair thinking that, you know, from a Utah perspective, this game, ultimately doesn't really matter because if you have to win the Pac-12 championship game anyway, you know, what is the use of this game? I get that. I don't agree with it. Look, this is major college football with high stakes. It's competitors and the coaches and the whole thing. Utah will play to win this game Saturday. There's no doubt that they're going to come out and play to beat Oregon. But if they lose this game, it is not the end of the world if you're Utah. You're playing to win, but it's not the end of the world if you lose. Oregon, given that Oregon is number 3 in the college football playoff rankings, if they want to ultimately go to the CFP, they have to, you know, that all starts with they have to win out. They have to be 12-1. They have to win the Pac-12 championship game. They have to win out. If Oregon loses this game, you're not going to the college football playoff. So from a stakes perspective, you know, what is on the line? Yes, Oregon has a lot more to play for than Utah, but that's not to say that Utah has nothing to play for.
You know, I'm confused about these irrational fans you bring up. it seems to have eluded us out here. Yeah, right. The last thing I want to get to is I always like to wrap with the writer from the opponent by kind of stepping out of our Eugene Duck bubble. Like you mentioned, we know what's at stake. But in talking with the coaches and players, plus Josh, your observations about this particular Oregon team beyond containing Kayvon Thibodeau, what aspects of these Ducks seem to have everybody's attention?
You know, it's funny you ask that. I'm actually getting ready to write something for tomorrow. I think, you know, not necessarily stopping, but certainly containing Travis Dye is a huge priority for Utah's defense. Dye leads the Pac-12 in yards from scrimmage. He leads the Pac-12 in plays from scrimmage. He's elusive. He's not your prototypical running back. Utah's defensive line, they have had noticeable trouble at times this season setting the edge and containing the run. BYU ran all over Utah back on September 11th. Now, look, September 11th was a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Oregon State did the same thing on October 23rd in Corvallis. Oregon State did anything it wanted on the edge with the run. So if you're going to beat Oregon, there are, you know, a certain few things that you absolutely have to have on your checklist. Dealing with Travis Dye is one of the things that Utah has to do Saturday night.
Folks, he's Josh Newman, fellow East Coaster, now fully embedded in Pac-12 country. check out his work in the Salt Lake Tribune. On Twitter, the handle is at @Joshua_Newman. Hey, Josh, great having a chance to have you as a guest. Much appreciate the time. And for sure, when early February rolls around and it's Ducks at Utes and Hoops, expect the phone to ring.
Sounds good, Steve. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.